Today's Dharma talk will be on case 6 in the Hekigan Roku, the rock collection. Case 6 is entitled Uman's Every Day is a Good Day. Main subject. Uman addressed the assembly and said, I am not asking you about the days before the 15th of the month, but what about after the 15th? Come and give me a word about those days. And he himself gave the answer for them. Every day is a good day. Secho's verse. Setting aside one, you gain seven. No one can rival you, above, below, or in the four directions. Quietly wading the rapids, you extinguish the sound of the waters. Watching at leisure, you retain the tracks of flying birds. Grass grows rampant, mist lies thick. Famed for emptiness in Zazen, yet flowers rain down on you, for shame. Snapping my fingers, I scold you, Shunyata. Don't be confused, or else 30 blows. I'd certainly like to thank everyone for coming this morning. Not very many of us. Maybe the word got out that Kurt wasn't going to be here. but very glad you came. You know, I've been coming here and sitting with Kurt for almost 16 years now. And up until a year and a half ago, I very rarely made it to the Saturday sit because my job, I was a mailman and we delivered mail on Saturday. But I would come two or three times a year when my day off happened to fall on that Saturday. And I really, really was so jealous of people who got to come every Saturday. You know, I'd wake up on a Saturday to go to work, and I'd do my Zazen in my home. And I would think of the people getting in their cars to drive to Rutgers and practice. Do the Saturday sit, and when I was at work, I'd look at the clock and I'd say, "Oh, it's 9:30. They're having their bathroom break now." You know, you get to know the schedule. And I've spoken with other people who've had the same experience with Sesshin. If you go to Sesshin regularly and then you miss a Sesshin because you have to be away somewhere. You'll be away and it'll be like at 2:30 in the afternoon, you'll know it's like, oh, it's time for Zazen, right? You know what people are doing. It becomes a part of you. And all the practice sessions, all the sits we have here and in Highland Park and at Sesshin, for me and for people who've been practicing a while, I'm sure, you know, it's such an amazing resource to have. You know, it's when you're away from home, you know, I tend to take a cushion with me if I can, or make do with cushions from the sofa in the hotel where I'm staying. But I usually, I do Zazen every morning. But it's not the same. It's not the same as being able to get together with the members of this Sangha. And some people have been practicing for a long, long time. Some people are just starting out. And there's all the people in between. But, you know, I remember growing up, we grew up Catholic. You know, we go on vacation. And my parents, especially my father, they would, you know, look in the local paper and the phone book and see, you know, where the Catholic Church was that could make it to Mass that day. And, you know, and that sounds rather devout, but, you know, you should also be told that my father was always looking for the shortest Mass, especially when he was on vacation. He didn't want a lot of hymns or carrying on. He wanted to get in there and have Mass done. Zen practitioners don't have that luxury. There's not an active Zendo in every town. Every town you go to, you can find a Catholic mass or some sort of Baptist church or a synagogue or a temple. But to come across a practice center, it's much more rare. And I'm thankful to have found Kurt and to find, you know, this Sangha. I'm sure I'm not alone in realizing how lucky we are. For those of you who are here, I hope you're not disappointed that Kurt's not here giving a talk. I've got a lot of different places I can start. You know what? I'm going to start with a friend of mine, an old friend. I haven't seen him in years, and like so many people in that category, I've only come in contact with him again through Facebook. When I say years and years, I haven't seen him since the 60s. You know, he was a few years older than me, and he was in a rock band, and I used to hang out and help carry the amps, and he was very much into astrology at the time. You know, back in the 60s, that was a little more of a popular pursuit, kind of in like the first wave of what we now think of as the New Age thinking. You know, which later just became, you know, people asking what's your sign as a way to like break the ice at parties. But Bruce was very, very much into astrology, and apparently all these years later he still is, and he's continued to study it. The other day on Facebook he posted something to the effect of, I think it was, he said 50% of the time when Venus is in Aries prior to the vernal equinox, there's a heat wave in the northeast United States. Well, I'm, you know, a little skeptical and facetious at times, especially of the 50%, so I typed back on Facebook. I said, really? I had always heard that 50% of the times that happened, there wasn't a heat wave. And, you know, because the 50% is, you know, one of those totally meaningless percentages, because it always means just the opposite. You know, 50% of the cars that come into Meineke don't need a new muffler. Well, that means 50% of them do need a new muffler. But he didn't really catch the humor of it, and his next entry was, I mean, he wasn't upset, but he had just two or three paragraphs, which in Facebook parlance is a novel, of statistics and facts and, acknowledging that, you know, more research needed to be done. But he was very, very thorough in his astrological assessment of our meteorological expectations for the vernal equinox. I don't get it. But what I do get is that that's a very natural human tendency, and probably one that has its root in just being able to survive, is that we tend to take large sets of facts and find the pattern. We have to find the pattern, try to make sense of everything that comes at us. In the course of finding patterns, over time, we tend to make the pattern be what we judge our reality against. We're no longer just taking in facts and finding the pattern. Something is right or wrong, to a greater or lesser degree, in terms of how well it fits that pattern. Lately, in our Sangha, we've had quite a run of significant data that might fit into a pattern. You know, we have dear members that are moving away. We had our Dharma ancestor pass away. We've had people with dire medical conditions. We've had people suffering terrible losses in their family. And all around the same time, you know, all in this period of time, and your first thought is, you know, well, what's happening? You know, it's like, could it be Venus is in Aries? You know, what? Why all of a sudden so many things seem to be happening? You know, things seem to be like falling apart. You know, there's a book entitled Things Fall Apart, something like that. But, you know, things falling apart, things falling back together. You know, we lost Genki Roshi at the ripe old age of 81 or 2, I forget. You know, so, but, you know, now we have the world without Genki. You know, we didn't have that before. You know, so it's always, you know, we have our preferences. You know, we like things to stay the same or to fit into the pattern that we've come to know. And they don't, and that can be difficult. And sometimes, you know, we you know, like the astrologer, we search to find a reason or a pattern, you know, why so many things all at once. But, you know, we know that it doesn't work that way. You know, as we sit and watch our breath, you know, it's one sit, another sit, day after day, year after year, we come to know that reality is never as simple as, you know, fitting into a pattern or black and white, you know. We all have our preferences, you know. Just like 50% of the time something happens always means that 50% of the time it doesn't. It always reminds me of the opening of the verses on the faith mind. You know, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. That's like giving it with one hand and taking it back with the other. The great way is not difficult. Good, good. I like something that's easy. For those who have no preferences. Whoops. Who are those people? Who are the people that have no preferences? Ah, I knew there had to be a catch. So we all have preferences. You know, when love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Well, that takes some doing. We love things, we hate other things. You know, we all have preferences. Sit, watch our breath, enter Mushin. That desire to have this over that. I wouldn't say so much that it disappears, but just like our chattering mind, it tends to fade more into the background, and we slowly, slowly can become more open to being in this moment as it is, just exactly as it is. You know, we prefer things to be one way, and they're not. And the suffering comes not so much from the things that happen to us, as perhaps from just wanting them to be different. You know, my wife and I have this discussion about pets. Sometimes it's just, oh, pets, oh, I hate to see a pet suffer, you know. And no one wants to see a dog or a cat being mistreated or in obvious pain. But I always think, the dog or cat really doesn't suffer in the human sense of the word. They feel pain, and they would like to not have the pain to a certain extent, but that's about it. Because suffering, the dog who's got a thorn in its paw doesn't sit around and think, oh, why me? Why now? Why this thorn in my paw? It was so much nicer when I didn't have the thorn in my paw. Will I ever get this thorn out of my paw? No, it's for the dog, it's just thorn in paw, thorn in paw, thorn in paw. And when the thorn is taken out, it's like, no thorn, no thorn. So our suffering is as much from what happens to us. It's probably more from just wanting something else. You want a different reality. That even happens when we do zazen. We sit and we're like, this is going to be great. I'm going to clear my mind. And about halfway through the sit, it's like, oh, God, my leg hurts so much. Yesterday I sat and my leg didn't hurt. I wish I could be having the sit I had then. Or, I wish I could get to a point where my legs don't hurt. You're not at that future point, and you're not in the past. You're where you are right now. Even going to sesshin, people have an expectation. I haven't been to a sesshin in the last 5 or 10 years where Kurt at some point doesn't admonish us, please, have no expectations. Have no expectations. As it also says in the faith mind, even to be attached to the idea of enlightenment is to go astray. To set up what you dislike against what you like is a disease of the mind. Our practice is the moment, the moment, the moment. And to say, oh, I must be doing a terrible job of meditating because my legs hurt. I must be doing this wrong. This is a waste of my time. Just be with the moment. Be with your discomfort. Don't have a preference. Just come back to your breath. Come back to your breath and practice, practice, practice. Our preferences really are pervasive. They cover our thoughts, not just in the present. I prefer this moment to be different, but even as illogical as it seems, we prefer that the past had been different, or we prefer that the future will be different. We lost Genki Roshi, and we lost young Ethan within days of each other. It was quite a contrast. Here's Genki Roshi, lived to a ripe old age, accomplished Zen master, and his picture sat on one side of our altar for several weeks. And Ethan, 2 years old, just, if his pictures are any indication, just a beautiful child, 2 years old. What a tragedy, what a tragedy. And his picture sat on the other side of our altar for several weeks. And, it's at one point it's so different. This man lived a wonderful life. This person had his entire life taken away from him. So, and in another sense, it's a blink of an eye either way. We have our time, then we're gone. But we have our preferences. We'd prefer a future to be one where Ethan grew to be a wonderful young man and a, and a, a, family, you know, we see the pattern of our life as something that we would want for Ethan. We prefer that future. We prefer a past where Genki Roshi was a saint, where he was a flawless Zen master of great and unwavering principle. But what do we actually have? We have this moment. We have this moment to appreciate what actually is. And it's not an intellectual exercise. It's very, very painful. It's very, very painful. When I read the email about Ethan, I had to read it twice. I couldn't believe it. I must have gotten it wrong the first time my eyes went across those words. That can't be. So these, to have no preferences, it's not a matter of being cold or unfeeling. You will be sad. There will be pain. There'll be pain in your legs, and there'll be pain in your heart from time to time. But we have to be in this moment. The pain will only be increased if we insist on clinging to this phantom of how it could have been, how it would have been. I want this to be different. I want this to be different. You know, I'm reminded just now as I'm saying this, when in 2001, when the planes flew into the Twin Towers, there was about a week or more when in my morning sit, I realized that what I was feeling in my gut was, I wish that hadn't happened. I just wished so hard, and I could feel it, and it didn't make any sense. It wasn't going to not happen, but I wanted a past where that had not occurred. You know, and not just for the lives lost, for the way I could see it shaping our whole world. That should not have happened. I really, really found myself wanting that not to have happened, as illogical as that was. So this is where we find ourselves. You know, we want to have no preferences. We want to have love and hate both be absent, to not prefer this over that, to be at a kind of equanimity. And that can be very challenging, because I think intellectually we see that as a kind of deadness, you know, or a kind of numbness. You know, we don't want to prefer what we like against what we dislike. You know, that's like a form of numbness. You know, how can that be? As we practice, though, we realize that the more we can be in this moment, it's not about shutting off, you know, our opinions on what has happened and our plans on what we would like to have happen. But the perspective of being rooted in the present moment is the only way to really breathe life. I was going to say breathe life into ourselves, but I'll put the period after the word life. It's the only way to breathe life. You know, talk about the three worlds of time in the sutra: past, present, and future. Well, you know, that's a very ancient type of concept. Modern physicists aren't really sure there's such a thing as time. You know, it's another pattern that humans tend to make in their heads to order the data of events. But as a thing that, say, we could travel in, it appears not to exist. There are many physicists working in this area, but the one that comes to mind and I think is most accessible to the layman is Stephen Hawking, who may be, well, he is the preeminent physicist alive today. Some say when history is written in ages to come, it'll be Newton, Einstein, Hawking, and then whoever. And Stephen Hawking once said something to the effect that he's fairly certain that time travel is impossible. And just when you're expecting he's going to give a detailed scientific explanation, it's a very simple one. If in the future time travel were to be invented, why haven't we been visited by people from the future who could travel back in time? You know, a great mind, a scientific genius, a physics genius. But the obvious fact is, you know, you could probably no more travel in time than you could travel in Narnia. Because just like Narnia, that type of time doesn't really exist. So there is only this moment. This moment to live, to breathe, and to remember, to plan for the future. But our practice brings us more deeply into this moment, more deeply into that wellspring of our life. Of our actual life, this moment of life. And it's not about becoming colder or becoming callous, to be unfeeling about things that are truly, truly tragedies in our lives. There are members of our Sangha who are facing medical conditions of life and death. You know, no amount of being in the moment is really going to change that. This is their situation. A lot of bad things happen. You know, things that we do dislike, that we don't like. Just all we can do is keep coming back to our practice in this moment. So somewhere, there's a koan there. Main subject, Uman addressed the assembly and said, I am not asking you about the days before the 15th of the month. What about after the 15th? I'm not really talking about the past. What about the future? And what about the past? What about the future? Come and give me a word about those days. And he himself gave the answer for them. Which you can picture, you know, the assembled monks going, what do I say? What do I say? Uman says, every day is a good day. Every day is a good day. You know, that's what I like about that is that in fine Zen tradition, it presents like the smiley face of comfort. But in fact, is quite a challenging statement. Because the day when a loved one dies, how is that a good day? The day you find out you have a terminal condition, how is that a good day? You know, the day terrorists attack the World Trade, how is that a good day? You know, it's a tenet of Zen that The fourth vow, not the translation we use, but it can be translated, the Buddha way is unattainable. I vow to attain it. And what makes the Buddha way unattainable is that you cannot attain that which you already have. And a tenet of Buddhism, and Zen in particular, is that we are enlightened beings. We are all, each and every one of us, Buddha. At all times, without exception. Our practice is to realize it. Not to understand it, not to say, oh yes, I agree. Or not to build a philosophical system around the idea that we are Buddhas. Because if I might be so bold as to speak for us all, no one in this room really quite believes that. We don't feel that. Every day is a good day, to me, is the same sort of challenge as saying every one of us is a Buddha. Some days don't feel good at all. And rarely, rarely do we feel like we're the Buddha. When Uman says every day is a good day, he is really not trying to cheer us up. He's trying to challenge us to see past our preferences, past our desire to pit what we like against what we dislike, to see past that. He might have even said every day is a bad day. And we'd have the same problem. Well, what about, you know, the first day of spring and the flowers and I smell, you know, what about that day when my baby was born? How is that a bad day? You know, it can go both ways. 50% of the time it's good. 50% of the time it's bad. You know, all we have is this moment. All we have is this day. You know, they say the ground that you trip and stumble and fall onto is the same ground you will use to push yourself back upright. You know, things do fall apart. There's a quote that was posted on, someone else posted a nice quote on Facebook from Pema Chodron. The quote is, everything that happens to us is helping us to wake up. Not the good things, not some of the things, not the time we spend in Zazen, everything. Everything that happens to us is helping us to wake up. Secho's verse. Setting one aside, you gain seven. No one can rival you, above, below, or in the four directions. Quietly wading the rapids, you extinguish the sound of the waters. Watching at leisure, you retain the tracks of flying birds. Grass grows rampant, mist lies thick. Famed for emptiness in Zazen, yet flowers rain down on you for shame. Snapping my fingers, I scold you, Shunyata. Don't be confused, or else 30 blows. Every day is a good day. All we have is this day. All we'll ever have is this day. Although we look in the future and we call it that day, or we call it that day, we call it that day. Or we look in the past and, oh, remember that day? Remember that day? All we have is this day. And this is the day in which we can wake up. This is the day and we can realize our Buddha nature. This is a day when we can get through three periods of sitting. This is the day when we can make it to the bell without too much pain. This is the day we can practice together in this Sangha that is falling apart as Mars goes through Aries. But this is a good day. Every day is a good day.